Would you want your partner to be doing that to you? Oh, no way. So then we come to their truth in a non-judgmental way, is that they don't really agree with what they are doing. So they're building on their own truth in a very subtle, gentle way, or maybe not so subtle. But so then they can see where there's a sense of discord. They're acting in one way that's making them feel badly about themselves because they're not acting in accord with their truth. So as we start working with that again in a very non-judgmental way, and sometimes taking it back to childhood, well, as you were saying, you know, sometimes people link it back and say, God, my mom was cheating on everyone, or my mom, you know, stole my high school boyfriend. I've heard things like that, right? So they're afraid of being vulnerable. They're afraid of being in love. So we're working on it, and I'll often give homework. And here's why I give homework. People expect a 50-minute session of psychotherapy to do life-changing, you know, transformation, and it can. But often if we take that 50 minutes and do some homework with it, we're double timing it, maybe triple timing it. We're really increasing the benefits of that therapy session through journaling or drawing something and meditation, something to actually shorten their therapy time with me, because that's, you know, I'm mindful that it costs money, right, and time. But it also gives them a sense of personal power, which is what we're working to build. The sense that this person is learning more about who they are, what they want in life, how to listen, to have that talk with destructive fear and constructive fear, and then give them the capacity to start making steps forward. So the more that I take that stance, and here's a beautiful tidbit, the client that I am referring to, get a message from her, because I always help people with referrals, right? Happy to, whether they're my client or not. I get a message from her saying, may I please have a referral for a marriage therapist?
Mm.
And isn't that, it's just gives me shivers, because she left my office knowing I didn't judge any course that she took, but clearly she was unhappy living a, you know, quadruple life, so to speak, because there was a lot going on for her. And here she, of her own accord, decided that what she wanted to do was to work on something in her current relationship where that healing, where there might be a lot of healing potential.
In our society, in our culture, in Western culture at least, we often go and are encouraged to go for the quick fix. You know, what you're talking about is deep reflection, taking time, as you said earlier, slowing down, you know, listening to that voice that's not as loud as the voice of destructive fear. That constructive fear is, or their therapeutic or transformational voice is not as loud. And so it's, we go to addictions, you know, like alcohol or drugs or overbuying or you know, too much television or whatever it is, even sexual addictions. Or we could go for pharmaceuticals and just pop a pill. Oh, come on, let me feel better. Just let me pop a pill. Won't you just give me a prescription? Do you find that people are often butting up against that desire for the quick fix?
Absolutely. I devote almost an entire chapter on that in Joy from Fear, because 57% of people who see a caregiver, a primary caregiver for a mental health issue, 57% are given medication only with no psychotherapy. That is nearly, you know, out of 10 people, six of those people are not given treatment to address the underlying issue. And you're right. We are. And who do I fault? I don't fault the physicians, because they're, you know, given little spots of time, 10 minutes per patient or whatever it is. And many of them are not psychiatrists, right? And so they're doing the best they can, trying to throw a not so magic bullet at the issue. And who benefits? The healthcare system, you know, the big systems, the insurance carriers and the pharmaceutical companies are just rolling in money. Who is hurting? Our population. Our women, our men, our children, our elders. And so whether it's pharmaceutical that is used to soothe the symptoms, because we're not addressing generally the underlying issues, whether it's overuse of alcohol, as you said, you know, marijuana to numb out, and now we've made that, you know, and again, I'm not talking about occasional use of any product. I'm talking about people who use it as a way to self-soothe day in and day out. And then we look at, as you said, porn addiction, which is rampant and something I treat. And it's, you know, it's porn is as addictive, more addictive as than heroin, right? And it also encourages really isolated behaviors. So I get a little nuts on that because it has lots of wide-reaching effects, including harming children who often witness parents using porn. And they, some of them have become my clients who it's just memories in their head that they cannot erase. I'm able to help them move forward. But anyway.
So you're just bringing up a whole pool of information that many of us have not even thought about porn.
Oh, porn.
And the way the tentacles that goes out into a whole family configuration or relationships.
It's its own topic. I worked with juvenile probation, with sexual offender unit for 6 years. It was some of the most heartwarming work I ever did because I was really able to get in and break some of the intergenerational cycles. So getting back to your piece is, so we have all of these addictions, spending, sex, overwork, over whatever, overeating, all of these things, and they're masking the underlying issues. And you're right, we are in a quick fix society. So here's where I start asking people, if that works, if the quick fix society works, why the heck are things getting worse? Why do we have more drug abuse, more domestic violence, more hatred in the world than ever? It's because the quick fix mentality doesn't work. And I will challenge anybody to go toe to toe with me on that, because the only way that works, the only way I have ever found that really works, is to address the underlying issues, to have the courage, the strength, the vulnerability, the self-honesty to dig deep and address what is wounding you. And as a result, when we are wounded, we go about the world wounding other people.
So I know that you talk about we have three choices in facing reality. And one of the choices is to go to escape. And we've just been talking about that choice in addictions and, you know, just soothing ourselves in whatever sort of addiction we have, whether it's pharmaceuticals or porn or overworking or whatever it is. So that's escape. Another one is, you call it passively accepting or even sometimes irritably accepting what is. Like, let's say we're in a bad relationship or a relationship that's abusive, and we just sort of cave in and just accept it. This is just whatever. And then there's a third way. So I'd love for you to talk about those two ways and then tell us about the third way, which I know you feel is much more effective in our lives.
Right. So when we choose to self-soothe. And again, I really want to highlight, I'm not talking about people who need medication in order to function.
So medication can the caveat would be, it can kickstart us.
Absolutely.
Let's say we've gone through a terror. I mean, I know for me, I at one point in my life, I was in such stress, I've become agoraphobic. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even decide what to wear in the morning. And someone realized where I was, and a psychiatrist, when he heard all that I was going through, he said, look, let me just prescribe this medication. And it really kickstarted me. Mm-hmm. I didn't stay on it. Maybe I was on the medication for a month, you know. And then I was back out. So That's not what you're talking about.
Not at all. If it is done mindfully and the person is given the support they need to, here's what happens for many people. They're given a prescription for anxiety, for depression, for whatever it is, and no medical tests are done, no lab tests are done. It's just a primary care physician doing the best they can. They write a script, and then people come into me, they're self-medicating, they're using them, they're not using them, they're going on them, they're going off them, they're not being tracked. And then, but again, for somebody who needs medication in order to get out of bed, in order to not commit suicide and not go through these terrible ups and downs, in order not to be so anxious or agoraphobic that they can't leave the home or they can't function at work, of course, you need it as much as somebody with a broken leg needs a cast and a crutch. But the idea is we don't take somebody with a broken leg and not set it before we put the cast on and give them the crutch. We absolutely tend to the fracture. We tend to the broken leg. We don't leave a leg in two pieces, but that's what we do with mental state, right? We just put a cast on it. Here you go. Here's a crutch. Okay, bye-bye now. No, I'm saying, fine, use the cast. Use the crutch if you need it, but make sure you're getting treatment for the broken bone in your psyche.
So you're saying do the work.
Do the work.
Sit on the cushion. Do the work. Take the time. Well, I'd like to talk about psychotherapy or talk about having a witness to your life. But first, I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Carla Marie Manley, and she's the author of Joy from Fear, Create the Life of Your Dreams by Making Fear Your Friend. And she also has another book, too, that is on a wholly different subject, but also very interesting to many of us, Aging Joyfully, A Woman's Guide to Optimal Health, Relationships, and Fulfillment for Her 50s and Beyond. So that's another book that you penned, which looks really interesting. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. We were talking in the previous segment about the choices we have to facing reality, escapism or passively accepting it or irritably accepting it, one or the other. And then the third one, to face it and to start to work for change. So can you flesh that out a bit for us?
Absolutely. I'll stay with the same example, Justine, about relationships. So we can use that in looking at a marriage or a partnership. If it's not going well, as many relationships don't, right? We can choose to self-soothe. We can go home. We can drink our way through it. We can, you know, self-medicate with lots of marijuana. We can leave and, you know, go and overwork. We can.
So that's escaping.
That's the escaping. We can go and have sex with multiple partners or one partner outside. We can escape the marriage or the relationship. That's one option. That is an absolute option people have. Second option, and we can use this as a template for almost anything in life, these different options we have. The second one is to stay in the relationship, to put salt in the partner's oatmeal or a fly, you know, something to just be passive aggressive and get back. We can, you know, steal money. We can do all these things sort of as a quiet acceptance. And sometimes it's quiet. Sometimes
it's passive. Subversive, too.
It can also be subversive. It can be the form of retracting or stonewalling, not participating in the relationship, being unwilling to go to therapy, shutting down, yelling, being verbally abusive, right? That's you're staying in the relationship, but you're, you know, not really making it work. You're doing nothing. Then we have a third choice. And sometimes those, you know, that second choice, we can either make it worse or we can do nothing or we can just play games, right? Third choice is to change it. Change it. You don't like it. You've done everything you can and you need to leave the relationship. Then leave. Do your work. Invite the partner to therapy. The partner won't go to therapy, you know, or the partner's abusive and you have no hope. Then you must leave. To stay in phase two is not going to help anyone. And if there are children involved, then it's very poor modeling for the children. The other option, and this can happen if, again, in any sort of partnership, if both are willing, then do the work, salvage the relationship, and really do the work to stay in it in a healthy way. And there's also sort of a strange option in that realm as well, that if you are in a relationship and you cannot leave it, you cannot shift it, and we can think of this even in terms of political relationships, right? That sometimes, you know, we don't really feel like we have a choice. We don't want to self-soothe in option one. We don't want to be toxic, but because of financial circumstances or other circumstances or being a bit handcuffed because there's only so much we can do, you know, in a political relationship, that idea, that then maybe we just need to be in a place of quiet acceptance. And maybe that is our option of saying, and that's different from the second acceptance, but this is one that says, you know, for this reason, I cannot affect the degree of change that I want to in this relationship, but I will, watch me, I will affect change elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Maybe I will volunteer. Maybe I will be part of a march. Maybe I will do this. Maybe I will, if my, you know, I am staying here because I'm not happy, but I can't leave my husband because he's very, very sick and there's no one to care for him, but I will start creating a life of my own outside of that. I will start joining art groups or exercise
groups. So you're working like in this parallel.
Yes.
I have to stay here and do this, but parallel to that,
yes,
I'm having joy in my life and creativity and calling,
yes,
good people in my life. And I asked you this question in the last segment as we were ending the last segment. Do we need to go to a therapist? Do we need psychotherapy, or do we need a witness of some sort? What's your idea? Can we do this alone?
It's such a good point, Justine. I left a yoga class on Sunday and spoke with a yoga buddy, a friend of mine outside. I said, "How are you?" I could tell she was tired. And she said, "Oh, thank you for asking." And she went on for about 10 minutes about all of the difficulties she's facing. And I said, "Is there anything I can do?" And she said, "You just being here is my witness. Mm. You just listening. That is plenty good enough." Now, this particular woman is very together and has lots of skills in, you know, in mental health. So she might not need a therapist. But for me, there's no shame in seeing a therapist. Not just because I'm a therapist, but because we have no second thought about going to the doctor if we have a nasty flu or if our blood pressure is too high or to the dentist when we have a toothache. But here, the most important part of our being, our psychological well-being, we're embarrassed or don't want to spend the money or the time for therapy. And that's where I get to the question of, if you had a choice of physical or mental health, which would you pick? Me? Hands down, I know I wouldn't want to lose either, of course. But if I had to choose between being psychologically well and physically well, you could have the most gorgeous, beautiful, perfect physical body and top health. And if you're depressed, anxious, riddled with, you know, PTSD trauma, how much good is that physical body going to do you? Not much good. So for me, I look at mental health care and having that witness in a therapist, in a spiritual advisor, in a woman's group, in a best friend, in bibliotherapy, a book that you trust that you can read and do work in, not just a self-help book where you're reading and not doing the work because you must engage, which is why I wrote Joy from Fear the way I did, or a book club where you can create a sacred, safe, confidential, really important, confidential space to do your work. I do believe witnessing is so important. Because we're humans. We love to be loved. We love to be seen. And many of us, going back to childhood, were never loved or seen in the way that we needed to be. And therapy, if done properly, gives the client the opportunity to experience the unconditional, this is very Carl Rogers, right? The unconditional positive regard and the empathy that is so needed in life. And that is one of the benefits of therapy.
And even that alone can take you really far,
yes,
in your journey,
yes,
of self-revelation and healing.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, too, when the way that you work, there was something that popped out at me in your book. You give some wonderful examples, which we don't have time to go into today, but they're just great examples of case studies that you've, of course, you're not naming the actual person and so forth, and but they're wonderful examples. And there was one in particular where it was really hard. I think it was a man. It was really, really hard for him once he opened up to even thinking about talking about maybe his childhood or something or some trauma. It was really hard for him. And so you would say, okay, 0 to 10, what is your emotional state? And it gave him some power to know whether to go forward or not. To describe that process. I thought it was so effective.
I actually use that a lot because for a therapist, my lingo, being in touch with my feelings, easy for me, right? Because I do it for a living. For many people, you say, how are you feeling? And for men in particular, they are given, and our culture gives them, two emotions, fine and anger. I'm fine, I'm angry. And other than that, our men are not allowed to be sad. They're not really supposed to be particularly joyful to feel all this array of feelings. So to be able to break through to that, and also it happens with my female clients because many of them were taught to be shut down and withdrawn as children. So when you use a scale, 1 to 10 or 0 to 10, and you know, well, how are you feeling about that? Well, I don't really like my boss. Okay, tell me more about that. Well, I don't really know. All I know is no, I don't like him. Oh, so you don't like. Okay, what does that feel like? Well, maybe it's not liking. Maybe it's hate. I hate my boss. Oh, okay. Wow. And then you're on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate your boss? 1 being nothing, or, you know, 0. We could use 0. 10 being like the most horrific hatred you could ever imagine. Oh, wow. When you put it that way, am I allowed to feel a 9? You're allowed to feel anything you want.
Yeah.
We just don't want to act out on it. We don't want to do something to the boss. We just want to acknowledge you're feeling very, very angry at the boss. That's a big feeling, a 9. So it starts giving it a space, a context, a safe way to see that it's okay to feel a 9 of anger. It's absolutely okay. We just don't want to act on it.
Yes, exactly. So, all right, you've given us a lot to chew on here in really discovering how we can turn fear into an ally,
to
not be afraid. I just thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Writing this and putting this together and helping us understand better how to make fear an ally and not to be afraid of being afraid.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Dr. Carla Marie Manley. She's the author of Aging Joyfully, A Woman's Guide to Optimal Health, Relationships, and Fulfillment for Her 50s and Beyond. So there's one book. And the book we've been talking about today is Joy from Fear, Create the Life of Your Dreams by Making Fear Your Friend. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, drcarlamanley.com. And I'm going to spell that, Dr. D-R, Carla, C-A-R-L-A, Manley, M-A-N-L-Y.com, drcarlamanley.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3680.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. This program was recorded at Strawberry Hill Productions, a full-service podcast production studio in Novato, California. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Dr. Misterio's Happy Hour, the second radio show with Spanish subtitles. We broadcast in Technicolor every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM. Tune in. Fill your Sunday soundtrack glass with happy rhythms, predominantly in Spanish, but with tons of female and Canadian content. And join us for table talk with local and international artists. Dr. Misterio's Happy Hour, every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Bird Note. Driving through marshes, fields, and pastures in the rural southeast, you might not notice the watery ditches along the country roads, but they're worth a look. These channels, known as bar ditches, run for miles, providing narrow slivers of wetland habitat that are often teeming with life. Herons stalk the shallow water, stabbing at minnows. Plump water birds, called gallinules, swim on the surface. Reeds and bulrushes provide cover for secretive marsh birds like king rails. Red-winged blackbirds flash crimson epaulets as they sing. And boat-tailed grackles offer their own rough music. Many of these ditches are artificial, created when earth was dug up or borrowed to create roads. They've created conservation challenges, draining wetlands and changing the natural flow of water across the landscape. But many birds have adapted to this artificial habitat. Great news for the car-bound birder. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at Bird Note Radio.
This is Kelly from the Peak Publication Society, SFU student-led newspaper. Recently, news organizations have been facing issues sharing news content. All news outlets, including small publications like us, have been affected due to Meta's refusal to comply with the Online News Act and compensate news companies. We have been serving our diverse student community for years and need your support to continue. If you'd like to contribute as a paid writer, illustrator, or photographer, Follow us on Instagram at thepeak@sfu. Keep reading our stories at the-peak.ca. If Meta is listening, we're just a community promoting SFU events. Please don't block us again.